Rule five. Rule five. Okay. Three things engage the sober angel before the sheath created passes downward. The condition of the waters, the safety of the one who thus creates, and steady contemplation. Thus are the heart, the throat, and the eye allied for triple service, and basically the condition of the waters relates to the heart, the safety relates to the throat, and the mantrams that it can create to protect from the Agni Suryans, and the eye relates to contemplation. The focal point of energy that the man, the magician, has now created upon the mental plane, you know, in response to the soul and augmented by the Om, has reached a vibratory activity which makes it certain that response will be called forth from the matter required for the providing of the next and denser sheath. So it sounds like the astral material will be gathered. This vibration will result in an aggregation of a different type of divine life substance around the central nucleus of the thought form. The form occultly is to be sent forth to descend, to fly as a bird flies forth upon its mission, and a critical moment is near for the magician. Now, when anything descends, you know, obviously we're not really talking about up and down here. We're talking about a lowering of frequency. We're talking about engagement. Let's see if I get this correctly. Why is this not working? Okay. I got to get it before I forget. So we're talking about engagement with a level of substance energy which has a lower frequency.
Oh, it's an externalizing process.
Yeah, descent is retardation of frequency. That's what descent really is. Sorry. To fly as a bird flies forth on its mission, that's the thought form, and the critical moment is near for the magician because we've got, you know, these are very dangerous devas we're going to deal with. On the astral plane. We're still on the mental plane, however. One of the things the magician has to see to is that this form which he has constructed and which he holds linked to him by a fine thread of animated substance, it's a bit like the chela on the thread. You know, the master and the chela on the thread, it's a bit like the sutratma. It's an analogy to these things. A correspondence on a minute scale of the sutratmic thread whereby the monad or the ego holds in connection this form of manifestation, monad working through the ego. It's also that this shall neither die of lack of vital sustenance nor return to him with its mission unfulfilled. These are the two negative possibilities that can occur. Either death through devitalization, or a return which devitalizes the sender. Okay? Return which devitalizes the sender. I'm reminded of Robert Browning, and who was the poetess that married him? Elizabeth Barrett. Barrett Browning. So, you know, the father, kind of an eatable, I don't know, some sort of psychologically incestuous situation, and he wasn't very happy about their elopement, you know, so he worked for reconciliation and sent many, 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 many letters like this, you know. And but then the package of all of them was returned with not one open, not one. It had to have been a devitalizing experience, you know.
For who is this?
Elizabeth Barrett sent letters to her father after her elopement with Robert Browning, the famous, who's now considered to be a master, by the way, Robert Browning. released by Dr. Baker. And Alice Bailey had the high, held him in the highest regard, too. So he's probably one of the English masters, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, you know, you refused the communication. You totally cut her off after she eloped. It was not exactly the way we treat things in the present day, is it? Oh, in the 1860s, somewhere in there. Yeah. She was a Pisces with a lot of Virgo, maybe Virgo rising, sun in Pisces, and very fine poet, very fine. Okay, they, you know, it's interesting. They moved off to Florence, Italy, was it, together? And then Robert Browning had a spate of years in which he produced nothing. Amazing. Then she died and he started writing again. I don't know. Okay. When this latter catastrophe is the case, the thought form becomes a menace to the magician and he becomes the prey of that which he has created. The creation terrorizes the creator. The devas who form the body of the idea which has failed in its purpose form a drain upon his vital force. Sounds like we either have to keep that thought form vital, really learn how to send it forth, and not let it die out there, and definitely prevent it from coming back. He therefore sees to it that the motive or desire lying back of the idea, now clothed with its first sheath, retains its pristine purity. Now, why is he doing this? Apparently, this will prevent its returning. This is one of the things he has to do to prevent its returning. Okay. One factor to prevent its returning. That no trace of selfish intent, no perversion of the initial purpose or note of the solar angel has been permitted to bring in an unworthy vibration. So, to do this is to attend to the condition of the waters. The waters are entirely of the astral plane, huh? Are these waters entirely of the astral plane? Because motive is not of the astral plane. Not necessarily. So what's he trying to do? Maintain purity, be unselfish, allow no perversion, have no unworthy vibration appear. If these appear, he will have impure waters. These impure appear, there will be impure waters and return to sender may supervene. It seems that this is the case. These devas will, who form the idea, the body of the idea which has failed in its purpose, form a drain upon the vital force. Therefore, he seeks to keep the waters pure. It sounds to me like if he keeps the waters pure, there's less to attract it back, although, you know, this is not spelled out.
Pure motive.
Mm-hmm.
Non-selfish. A selfish motive will attract the thought form back to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. I think let's put that in there. Selfish motive. Yes, okay. Let's just say, yeah, because after all, it's us, isn't it? Selfish motive attracts the thought form back to sender. You know, because the emphasis has been on the self all along.
And in fact, they might make it faster then? There's got to be a science behind why it go back.
We go back because it's not really meant for the world. It's somehow meant to aggrandize the ego.
Right. But if it actually scientifically set up that way, that it actually returns, is it the true magnetic attraction? How is it set up that way? I mean,
I don't know. It just seems to me that if by creating this thought form you have yourself in mind, the thought form comes back to the one who is held in mind. That's possible.
Yeah. We are the creator.
We are the creator, and yet we're supposed to, you know, unselfishness is a releasing factor, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking about the world, then what you create goes to the place that you are thinking about. If you're thinking about, this will be good for me, you know, and back it comes. Okay, I think that's...
So that initiation doesn't have this problem because it's not working from the soul. So I think as long as we're working from the soul, we have to make sure there's purity all the way down.
Yes, yes, yes.
And if it doesn't work, it's then it's just going to... Okay, so if it's causing us a problem, then we get to go, oh, what did I do? And have I, you know, got my selfishness from there?
Yes, yes. And of course, we don't really know how to send it on, which is, I guess, you know, we don't really know how to send it out so that it comes back. At the same time, we have to detach ourselves from what we create. In other words, not everybody who's a good thinker and doesn't know the magical words suffers from this return.
No.
There's a lot about karma here. The whole idea of return to sender. In other words, if ego exists, then karma exists. And the completely unselfish, detached individual doesn't have the karma. So if you are somehow having your eyes upon the personal self, that which you create also has eyes for that little personal self. It comes back. And
because
then maybe that stays.
It doesn't sink in. It pops back automatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and the possibility, assimilation by the environment, proceeds better if there is less selfishness. You know, none of us is perfect at this time, and we can certainly create worthy thought forms that can do something of value, but we're not at the point where we are really sending them out and detaching them completely. We cannot do that. For most of us, I'd say, the thought form remains neither vampirizing us nor free to do good until we actually have the method of sending it forth, unless it can be sent forth by those who know better than we. Maybe they can detach it from us and send it, as we've been studying, perhaps.
Now, would a black magician, like Diane said, would a black magician know how to send it forth? Has the mind
yes,
turns on
they,
the forth?
They know.
They know.
They
send it out. It's not so infused.
Yeah, and eventually the karma comes back, of course. Of course. Yes.
There can be karma, I think, even from an unselfish thought form. Jesus, for instance, he still has karma with the Christian church. And we can engender service karma that will...
Okay, so we can talk about, you say, what are service karma from unselfish thought forms?
And Buddhists are talking about, Hindus are talking about good karma.
Mm-hmm.
Good karma. That we do good deeds, and that's why we. It's some kind of great wisdom to let people be then when they should not be helped, that they can manage themselves. That I think is creating good karma. That we come there and we try to protect them, but it is not wise to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we will be bound to that particular group or particular person or particular environment because we do good deeds.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's possible too. I think it's the we part that is the problem. You know, if you're, you know, we're told about some kinds of people who can act with no attachment, only as a part of the larger plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the karma comes to them, it's only them as part of the larger plan. It's not personal
mm-hmm.
in its return. If we have our eyes upon our personal self and if we're still the captive of the ego, then the personal application of karma returns to us. I mean, look at Master Moria. He was Moses, perhaps. He arranged for the... entry of the Israelites into Canaan and all of those lands. What type of karma is his in relation to this today? Master Jesus was Joshua. You know, he led that invasion. Has he already paid for that? It seems like we have issues which are repetitive of that period and they are probably involved in this. But are they involved as aspects of the planetary logos? Are they involved as planetary spirits? That's the question. As Chohans, who are in fact now part and parcel of the planetary logos. Are they in a way handling planetary karma rather than personal karma? But certainly involved in the issue, you know. So, great. Chohans may be involved in karmic situations, but the situations are now more of a planetary than personal kind. I think it's, you know, Master Jesus didn't really create the Christian church. St. Paul has got the karma with the Christian church, but Master Jesus has the task of somehow transforming all the ideological religions. You know, I oftentimes see him standing between Christianity, Islam, and Judaism in some way to bring harmony to these three. But I think his karma is of an older nature and helped to instigate the great battle between Judaism and Islam that's operating today. And so did Master M, I think. As for St. Paul, he's right in the thick of it. But maybe his method will be to dissipate the usefulness of outworn religions through the demonstrations of science.
Yep.
So that would be one way of dissipating their grip on human ignorance. When it comes to Master Rakusi, well, I feel that you know, he was somehow the master of all the third ray magic that you can possibly, product of the previous solar system. Actually, Solomon was too. You know, Moria was too, a great magician. And you know, the so-called architect of King Solomon's temple was Master R. So he was deeply involved. I don't know if he was Hebrew at that time or whether he was from another people. That would say a lot about it. But if the seeds of the first solar system ripened in the Buddha, meaning that he had come from there and they, you know, the best showed itself in him, then when I look at the magic of Master R and his knowledge of the acme of wisdom of the first solar system, namely Kabbalah and all that's found in the Old Testament, he really seems to have a link with that. And I don't think it's for no reason. So that these particular masters are in the master chairs at the moment, at a time when a terrible crisis is ensuing between first solar system trends and second solar system aspirations and intentions. I don't think they're here for no good reason. And probably some of us are pulled into that for various reasons too. Master DK and KH, on the other hand, I don't see them involved in the same way. I see them as moon chainers, but not related to the previous solar system. I'll try to write about that sometime and put out all the reasons. So anyway, working hard to achieve purity, selflessness, an unperverted natural approach, and worthy vibrations is meant by attending. That means attending to the condition of the waters. Okay. Now, the thing is, matter is water. Water is matter. So we're not necessarily yet talking only of the astral plane. Talking, I think, not only of the astral plane, because so many of these factors have to do with the mental plane. So many of the factors mentioned have to do with the mental plane. As we well know, water stands for matter, and the substances of the astral plane which are now under consideration are of prime importance in all form building. So let's just say that what goes on the mental plane has a lot to do with the condition of the waters. Mental conditions can affect the condition of the waters. So we have to, you know, it's like air and water. You know, if we have a windy, airy, if everything is blowing, it can get the astral waters into turbulence. If your thought life is chaotic, confused, and fragmented, the astral waters are going to be pretty messed up also. Choppy day with a lot of white caps and so forth. Okay, according to the substance used and the nature of the builders who respond to the note of the form in mental matter will be the purpose accomplished. So, you know, in other words, matter unsuited to the fulfillment of the original note, let's just say, could be attractive. Could be attractive. And then no good purpose will result. So we really have to see to these things on the mental plane, and we have to make sure that we choose well and see to it that the right type of mental entities are attracted to our thought form, which is carrying the note of the original God purpose. But if we're not really impressible by that note, then we will have a distortion of a distorted idea of what that note is. And then when we start to build around that note, we're not going to be able to build in the highest grades of matter that the note deserves. That could be a problem. So we must allow for good impression so that we can build in those substances of the mental plane which are suited to the egoic note. In other words, it may be a great egoic idea, but we're not yet in a pure enough condition or clear enough condition to really build in response to it. So that's why we have to, as you were saying, give a little time for that impression to make itself fully known.
We have to translate it clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which means without personal bias.
Sure, sure. And you know, our habit nature wants to respond immediately to what's come down. Oh, it's that. Go. You know. So, but if one allows the full impression to be made, perhaps, and uses Saturn to keep our habit nature in restraint, then maybe a better impression will be made, and then when we reinforce it, we'll be reinforcing something worthy of the original intention.
Lucille makes exactly that point, along with some other practical points about the creative process, and just a couple on the two stages that we've touched on. One, the fact that when we begin to create a thought form that has been soul inspired, we are automatically building a form out of substance that has a built-in conflict, a resistance to that. And we have to expect to encounter resistance in the process. And we will attract within our own mental body forms which are both supportive and oppositional to that. And we have to be, if we understand that, then we are so easily discouraged.
That's
when
right.
That happens, because it's another thing.
The other
point was exactly the one you were just making, that the tendency is to go quickly, once we have the idea, into activity.
Yeah.
But it's essential that we brood over and build a powerful, what's called a power potential, on the mental plane before proceeding with it. Otherwise, we're just diluting the whole process.
Okay, it's good points.
And then on the astral plane, as it descends into the astral plane, that same oppositional dynamic is encountered as well. And we have to maintain the alignment with the intent. Just because we've moved into the astral atoms, we don't become astrally polarized ourselves, but we remain mentally polarized and holding the alignment with the intent of the original impulse.
She was Aries.
Aries?
Yes, you
caught
Aries.
She's Aries' son. April 4th. I come forth from the plane of mind and rule. And when I look at her very closely, I see there's either Leo or Scorpio. I mean, I don't think her time of birth is given, but I've been trying to rectify her chart a little bit. And she has, the Aries thing about building from the initial impulse, I think is definitely there. Of course, the pioneering part. But we need the rising sign. I have her chart. you know, he kind of, oh, here's Scorpio. See, the moon just went into Scorpio. This is interesting. Okay, you know. Let's see, see if I have it. L-U-C-I-L-E. Scheibli. Scheibli. Okay, this is the noon chart. And the moon is Pisces, I think. Which, you know, it could be Aquarius, of course, but this is a link with the seventh ray planet. And, of course, the psychism, the possibility of receiving impression and so forth. Chiron and the sun are there, which gives the teaching aspect. And Mars, Venus are there in Taurus. There's the possibility of or conflict between those two. Mercury in Pisces, definitely. And that's the esoteric ruler of the sun. You know, I come forth from the plane of mind, I rule. Now, I had a couple of different charts worked out, but I was wondering, I was working, some water sign is operating here, I think. I thought there was a scorpionic quality, you know. I don't know like you know it, you know, but I was just going by physiognomy. Which I find, you know, you want to do physiognomy first in order to just make sure you're not way out of the ballpark. Now, this would be evening. I don't know. This would be evening. That's Scorpio, and then Mars would be... I'm still working on it, okay? Mars would be in Taurus. But I thought also, you know, Cancer was a possibility as well. Let's see. Well, let's see. Pictures downloaded. Let's see. These are... Is there something called My Pictures? You see anything that looks like My Pictures? I know there's something here.
You could Google image it.
Yeah, I could, but I yeah, I could. I could just do that. I know I have it, you know, and I was working on the images. L-U-C-I-L-L-E? Two L? And then images and... yeah, okay, this is the thing that made me... Well... Yes, that may be the case, but the face structure doesn't change very much. Not very much. And then this is... you know, pretty strong chin. I tell you what, I've seen this kind of neck involved with Leo. And the earlobes are long. Of course, you never know what's hanging from them. But, and another thing too, you know, the when the nose widens like this, and you know, you've got Taurus and Leo possibility. But the eyes, Cherry, and when the eyes go, when the eyebrows go like this, oftentimes Cancer is involved. But you can't tell whether it's just Cancer or the Cancer part of Scorpio or the Scorpio part of Cancer. So and the chin is pretty strong too, but I'm the only way to do this is to really study the life, and then one could come up with the necessary astrology of it. But I'm recognizing, you know, some of the Cancerian qualities are there, and I just have to study right under here to see if there's a line or not. I know all of this seems very materialistic, but from another point of view, the inner Davic forces build in a certain way, and they build in that way over and over again. Of course, it's very fluid, and they all mix and blend their building techniques, but the end result is a very strong mixture of precisely those signs and planets which have been available.
But that's why you have an impression, you see a person and you think, my God, look so familiar, and yet you don't know him, but there's something in his feature that is just so reminiscent of another.
Yes.
You know, and it's like a type, you see, there.
There are types. Yeah. We're being repeated over and again. We're one being, but constantly according to what the building energies are available, we are all being formed in a very plastic way, given what's available. Almost anyone you can turn to, you can just identify 5 or 10 features in their face which are correlating repeatedly with certain indications.
Reiteration,
yeah. I mean, you know, when you're dealing with curly hair and so forth, you know, it's oftentimes a Taurus thing, when, you know, the electric hair, the Virgo and the Aquarius and that kind of thing, so... the dimple in the chin, the dimples here. Anyway, don't let me digress. Onward.
That's another course in itself.
A whole other course.
Okay, it's okay.
Well, you know, it'd be fun to do.
Yeah,
it'd be fun to do. We're working on a book on that. We've got a lot of famous people, and some infamous people, and some not so famous people. By the way, I'd like to take pictures of most of you. That'd be a good one, Tony. That'd be good.
Michael, I have one more point related to the astral plane, and maybe the most important point of all has to do with desire and the distinction between desiring your creation to manifest,
yeah,
and the magnetic field of force that compels a thought form into manifestation. That the desire is the form's, the intense own desire to manifest, that we feed it with our emotional, astral energy, but it's not desire we're feeding. We're acting from a point of will. If we desire something, we're not using the will. We're actually drawing, sucking from it, because we're recognizing, we're feeding the forces of opposition, because we're realizing, okay, this is not in manifestation. I want it to be in manifestation, but it's the opposite of the will.
Mm-hmm.
The will to do something is not to desire something. You just do it. You don't desire.
This is a Vulcan Mars opposition.
And it is about like the army of the voice.
Hmm.
So the army of the voice in that lower lives, they are those who can respond to the higher sound. And if we hold that sound, then the better substance is coming into that building. But if there is a desire, it is that we take the lower substance, and that is not going to carry forth what we were the original intention.
Okay, so here we are here. According to the substance used and the nature of the builders who respond to the note of the form in mental matter, will be the purpose accomplished. Will the purpose be accomplished? And that's also in mental matter and in astral matter, both.
Mm.
We seek the highest quality builders, and I think what's being said here is the a higher quality of builder will be evoked if the note of the ego is preserved and its will to manifest its will to manifest is sustained. So the clearer we are and the more we rely upon the ego itself as the true magician and keep ourselves out of the way, what we may want, what we do. In other words, a certain divine indifference. It's like healing, you know, you have to keep, well there you have to keep desire and will in leash. You use love. But a certain divine indifference is needed to keep the person out of it.
Because there can be the desire of the soul, if we may say.
Yeah.
But if there is this desire of the personality, and that is what D.K. talks about this time, that there is, he says like a special group, meaning that it's not special by being special, but because of the need this time is to build very strong bridge between the mental to physical via the, or no, astral and physical via the etheric, which is patterned alignment with the soul. We have patterns between astral and etheric, patterned by the desire of the personality. And now we need to have that bridge. That's why this special group has been sent, and it is according to the white magic that they are mentally polarized, and they are able to now to open this inflow between the astral and etheric in according to the soul plan.
It's amazing how many groups DK mentions for specialized work.
And this for this time.
This is one of them. You know, it's not only the 10 C groups, but somewhere in LOM, is it? Or, you know, externalization of the hierarchy mentions a lot of different groups which have very specialized work to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so...
something identical to what you were saying, that
the
astral body is the desire body of the soul.
Right.
That's just the way she calls it.
Right.
Exactly the idea.
Yeah. And I think that then we then use this, the higher part of the astral body, where I think is
the etheric part.
Yeah, the etheric part of the astral body, where the star is still pointed upwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a whole interesting idea about the orientation of the star, differentiating according to the etheric part of the plane and the dense part of the plane. Okay, well, let's move. So we have here the nature of the physical vehicle. Okay. This is the most important stage in many ways for the astral body of any form conditions. The nature of the physical vehicle. Okay. The transmission of force from the next highest plane. Okay. Provided the man on the physical plane can hold the purpose steady and refuse to permit its distortion by the influences and vibrations emanating from the lower man, then the devas of Kama can carry on their work. I would remind students at this juncture that any thought form necessarily finds its way into greater streams of energy, emanating from advanced thinkers of every grade, from the planetary logos downward, and according to its nature and motive. So of the thought form, so the work of evolution is assisted or retarded. It is in this connection that the Nirmanakaya's work manipulating streams of thought energy, vitalizing the forms created by men, and thus carrying on the work of construction or destruction. So it goes back to the idea that whatever we create can be used. So we see to its quality and don't worry about the rest. They have to use that which exists, hence the necessity for clear thinking. So now he actually explains fully what he means by this term. Having purified the waters or safeguarded his desires, this is what he means finally by it. Even though, in a way, all matter is water, and you do have to have the proper motive, and you have to see to all of the mental requirements as well. This is his definition of purifying the waters.
So, is he saying that the Nirmanakayas kind of create themselves the thoughts that want to impress into humanity, and that they have to work with what we create?
Well, the Nirmanakayas have many functions, and one of them is to be the registrant of Shambhalic purpose. And so they certainly have to be as sensitive as possible. They have to hold what they receive from Shambhala and send it into hierarchy. But it also seems that they have other work to do in managing what has been created below and directing it properly. So I think, you know, we have a couple of different functions. We're not saying that they can't create anything, but they are very Davidic in a way. Their responsibility is to register properly, rather than to necessarily create themselves.
So we said that we are registering, up the purpose
of
Shambhala,
and manipulating,
and we are also registering what is down.
Yes, and manipulating it.
Try to kind of
guide it properly, in line with the purpose that they're registering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, they have to use, he might as well have said, they have perforce to use that which exists. Mm-hmm. Just like every master does. Masters are oftentimes using the third best. That's what we're told. That's what Alice Bailey says. I've always felt I was second or third best, but I had to be used. That's what she said. Well, I guess she really felt it, you know. To use that which exists, hence the necessity for clear thinking. Having purified the waters or safeguarded his desires, the thinker next proceeds with the use of certain words which are imparted to him by the solar angel, and here we are going to find that one petal and the throat center are in use. So now we've seen to the position, to the purification of the waters. Okay, now let's just review how it is one safeguards one's desires and purifies the waters. What's involved up here? Do we remember?
You don't desire for the separated self.
That's the big one. You don't desire for the separated self. Let's see, what did he say particularly? Seeing to the condemning. Okay, this is what you do. And we said it before, no selfishness, much purity, no perversion, no unworthiness, all of this, no egotism. You could, you know, we could make a list of many no's. Okay. A list of many no's to purify, to speak to the condition of the waters.
I.e. Yalas. Is that right?
Of many, 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 many yamas, I see what you mean. Uh-huh. Restraints, i.e. yamas. Okay, fine. Restraints. Okay. However, let's just say we should not forget in this kama monastic world that the condition of the mind affects the condition of the waters. If you're filled with all kinds of selfish thoughts, then the waters are going to be in an impure condition. The magnetism will be centering around yourself rather than outgoing in the form of love and right relationship. Okay, so let's just go on, you know, because time rushes on here. Okay, so let's see. Now, the thinker next proceeds through the use of certain words which are imparted to him by the solar angel, and I want to just put in here, and certain petals and chakras to protect himself from the devas of elemental nature. That's a very composite phrase. Usually there are devas and elementals. But he talks about devas of elemental nature. And generally he means here lower unconscious devas. Okay. Lower and unconscious devas. With which he is purposing to work. On the mental plane, the nature and vibration of the solar angel proved sufficient protection. I guess whenever you're in the magic business, you need protection because your vehicles could become undone in some way. You could become the prey of Vedic forces. But the solar angel, let's just say, was close enough. He explains this, was close enough to protect. He says scientists work much more group-oriented than do religionists because they are closer to the soul. i.e. the mental plane is closer to the soul than the astral plane is where the religionists work. So when we work in the mind, it's not so dangerous. And besides, our mind is not so powerful. In our particular solar system, it's the astral devas and Lord Varuna who are the powerful ones. So we have really a force here to deal with. But he is now purposing or proposing to work with the most dangerous elementals and existences in the three worlds. And someone said, well, okay, Pulaski said it was the sylphs or the air devas who were the most wicked, but that was on the dense physical plane, not in all the three worlds. Okay, she says the air devas are the most wicked and the most difficult to deal with on the physical plane. Okay, but when it comes to the three worlds, It is the water elementals.
Air Deva, can we get a...
Well, you know, what do you have? Salamanders for fire and undines for water and gnomes or such for earth and sylphs of various kinds for the atmosphere, the gaseous level.
And how are they the most expensive?
She didn't say.
I think it's easy to think. If we look this morning and we see how the tiniest little ripple is moving that nature. So in that sense, if we think about us, how we can control that tide of it, like the wind, how we control the wind. Yeah.
And also the air Deva's projected by the throat chakra in talking, in saying bad things, you're writing on these air Deva's that can only amplify when they hit the person intended.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That okay. Is, yeah. Okay. Master Moria says that when we send forth a stream of mockery, it will return to us as a stoning.
What is mockery?
Well, you know, when we assail people with all kinds of vicious words and
insults?
Take insults and, you know, just tear them down, it comes back as stones against us.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what he said. He's looking at the karma of those people who are being stoned.
Wow. I've gone through a lot of windshields in my day.
Have you really? Whoa, whoa. How about seatbelts? Was that before the seatbelt thing?
No, I'm not. I used them up. I hit a stone.
Okay.
Metaphorically.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're finished with any possibility? Yeah. These protective formulas are sounded forth by the thinker in conjunction with the solar angel. Now in this case, the thinker here is in the three worlds. In conjunction with the solar angel, at the moment the thought form is ready to receive its astral sheath. Ready to receive. It doesn't exactly sound like plunging into the astral. It sounds like magnetic work is operative. Magnetism is operative. The mantram deals with the forces which impel activity in the Agni Suryans. Agni Suryans are the Astra Devas and even elementals. It's a very broad term. Usually it means Devas. But there's a couple of references where you see that anything that moves on the astral plane, DK is throwing into the category of Agni Suryans. So it's restraining the forces of the Agni Suryans and starts a stream of protective energy from one of the heart petals of the egoic lotus. Now earlier, remember, he mentioned a will petal. I forget where that will petal went. It was a will petal that... What did it do?
The first impulse.
Okay, but did we say where else it went? Contrast this with the will petal used by the ego, or by the solar angel, according to its ability and prerogative. I forget where it, you know, because here we have a lineup between one of the heart petals, the throat center, and this stream of energy. And I forget where the will petal, could it be just that the whole magical process started with the use of a particular will petal? I seem to remember that. That according, but regarding the will petal, will petal. Regarding the will petals, according to the type of form the solar angel wishes to create, so will the particular will petal be used. Also, according to the development of the soul. But now we're talking about something different. We're talking about a heart petal starting a stream of protective energy and going through the throat and basically teaching you what mantra to use through your throat center to get that stream going. So you, the thinker, under the impulse of a heart petal, one of the heart petals, start a mantra going, which starts a stream of energy going, which holds off the Agni Suryans, which coming in can drown you or devitalize you. There are a number of ways of death that you can, the magician can be, have his entire astral body removed by these beings. So yes, and then the ego has no choice but to snap the thread and start another incarnation. In other words, you can burn up, you can be vampirized and devitalized, you can be suffocated. I just want to give you an incentive for white magic, you know? So everybody knows what they're getting into, you know, and that's why this is a science, you know. Remember when those people went in there with their bare hands handling radium? They didn't know what they were doing. They were handling radioactive isotopes with their bare hands. They all died later, you know. So we don't know what we're doing either. He tells us about the casualties that will be suffered in the investigations of the day of the kingdom. We better know what we're doing, you know.
Well, but we don't know anything.
That's right, so we better be circumspect. We better be very cautious and wait till we're told, or at least do the things we can do and not venture in where angels fear to tread. Because you know there's going to be a bunch of people in the coming eras that just want to do magic. And they're going to run in there where angels fear to tread.
Yeah.
We won't be among them, right?
It's almost like you need to really focus on the idea of protection all throughout the process, because we just don't have this idea of needing to protect themselves in many ways.
No, yeah, and we have, of course, and we don't want it to become a egocentric motive, just a wise instrumental motive. In other words, you know, if you're going to handle a firearm, you have to train to handle it. So if you're going to handle magic, you have to train to do this.
That's why it is so important to organize the mind. Because if there in the mind there is that it sounds with the soul, that is so much more powerful to keep these forces in their place.
Exactly. We have mental control. And remember that we read yesterday that when the words for releasing the thought form come, they come in the solar angel's stream of energy, and we are guarded by the pure motive of the solar angel and by the fact we can't remember those words, or they are embodied in the solar angel's influence. Okay, anyway, just, you know, moving on here, a stream of protective energy is started from one of the heart petals. This circulates through the throat center of the man and sets up the circulatory stream of energy around him, which automatically repulses the devas who might, through blind, unintelligent work, menace his peace. Now, you know, the word peace is an astral word in many respects, and we're talking about an entirely turbulent astral condition which will not allow the magical process to continue. We might as well know, you know. The members of the army of the voice are controlled by the throat center, right? They are the armies of the voice, after all. We just have to know what we're saying, and our alignment has to be right.
Michael, did you say earlier that basically what happens is you use this pedal when you go to photos of the heart to discern what this mantra is?
In the discerning of mantras, the egoic stream of force may contain them.
If you kind of attune to that.
Yeah, you attune and you may find out what it is, or you may not need it. May just work.
It just works, yeah.
But the thing is, I was talking about a different type of mantram used to release the thought form. This is the mantram that is used to protect you on the astral plane.
But isn't there is a kind of mantra formula, right?
Yes, there is. And the best thing is to have it communicated to you by a member of the hierarchy when you are in a trusted condition to receive it. That's the most scientifically reliable. That's the way to go. So meanwhile, we have to serve. We really have to prove what our motive is to hierarchy. In other words, by our service we will be known, and you cannot trust anyone who doesn't serve. You can't. They can't. We prove our motive through service. We prove our selflessness through service. Any person who's full of himself, going to the hierarchy and saying, teach me this, has to be rejected. because that ego, that lower ego, will always provide an obstacle to the true work. So, you know, the first thing is burn out the lower ego. And there's all kinds of ways to do that, but DK simply says, take your eyes off your separated self and just help. Okay, we're repulsing the Agni Suryans at this point. These two matters attended to, desire adjusted and identity guarded. Isn't that an interesting way of looking at it? What could the Agni Suryans possibly do that would warrant the use of such a word as identity guarded? You know, I think they lose their self-possession, frankly. You know, the unruly forces cause disintegration. They lose their control. Their consciousness is not intact. He told us that certain seventh-rate types get into such a power situation that their motive is not pure. The force rushes in, and now they're warring with their entire lower lunar nature. I think this is what can happen here. Let's see. No, I won't go there. You just have to believe me. Okay.
We do.
Yeah, okay, okay. Warring furiously. I'm sorry, I just... okay, okay. Overtime. Time off. Okay.
Warring furiously.
There's only one. Okay. If a man, okay, this is good, this is on the seventh ray method of, ritual work. I seek to bring the two together and the plan is in my hands and how shall I work and all that. And the alignment, alignment comes, alignment, crisis, light, integration, blah, 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 integration, revelation, integration. The moment that this alignment is achieved, now this is the seventh ray soul, okay? The moment this alignment is achieved, then let the disciple remember that it will mean a tremendous inflow of power, of energy, from both the aligned points, from both directions, converging upon him. He aligns below, he aligns above. The subterranean forces rise, the heavenly forces descend. Inflow of power, of energy from both aligned points, both directions, converging upon him as he stands in the midway place. Ponder deeply upon this truth, for it is this fact which always evokes a seventh-ray crisis. It will be obvious what this crisis is. Would you know? I wouldn't. If the man concerned is materially minded, selfishly ambitious, and unloving, the inpouring energy will stimulate the personality nature, and he will immediately be warring furiously with all that we mean by the instinctual, psychic, intellectual nature. When all these three are stimulated, the disciple is often, for a time, swung off the center into a maelstrom of magical work of the lower kind, sex magic and many forms of black magic. He is glamored by the beauty of his motive and deceived by the acquired potency of his personality. So hence, you know, ego out of the way. You know, it's the old thing, if you put a muddy foot on the electric ladder, it gets caked. This is from Master Hilarion. And here we have the Tibetan saying, if you're not pure when you call for the force, you're going to be, everything bad in you is going to be stimulated, and you're at war, right? Mm-hmm. So the greatest, let's just say that before we call in the power, which is Ray 1, we better make sure that the purity, which is Ray 2, is operative. I mean, it just makes sense, doesn't it? Otherwise, we're going to lose lives in the process.
So that means all the lower vehicles have to be totally purified.
Well, yes, I would say, yes, to a great extent. Because every thought in there that is not of a pure nature is going to become its own little monster, you know? It's going to be potentized, and the next thing you know, what was a minor little demon that you could control is suddenly going to be a major devil. Anyway, you know, there's nothing wrong with being warned about the dangers involved in this process. It just makes sense to know these things. Not to exaggerate them, but to just really be cautious. You know?
Sounds like Crowley's journey then.
Well, yeah, Crowley didn't purify himself, and he had a lot of power.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He died of suffocation, really, kind of emphysema, you know, just overdoing it with everything he could smoke. Yeah. So, you know, someone told me, or I heard about an interview conducted with two men, one was Gurdjieff and one was Crowley.
Really?
And the interviewer, whatever, was astonished at Gurdjieff's purity and freedom and power, and Crowley's suffocation. The energy had ceased to flow, and he was in his final days from having abused everything.
Yeah.
You know, so. Well, there was a real example. You know, you got to Libra on the ascendant, or Libra sun, Leo on the ascendant. That's what it was. So he had the choice. There was that Ajna center, but of course he opted in the direction of pride, and he had that tough Capricorn moon also, which made. I've seen that a Capricorn moon can incline a person towards materialism. It may be a very good thing for discipline and so forth, but it may also be very hard. Habits to break materialistic habits.
Oh, well, you said in a former PhD class that many of the guides surrounding Hitler crippled
them
all.
Moon Capricorn, they had a bunch of earth signs, well, especially Taurus and Capricorn. Yeah, exactly. The story about Crowley is
Moon Capricorn.
But she's a nice one. Yeah, okay. She's a good one. Glenda's in no danger here. Okay. You know, he was just so sold on himself, you know what I mean? So believing in his own little ego. So proud. Wow. You know, there's no third degree there, you know what I mean? Yeah.
So if someone offers to do a tarot reading for me using Aleister Crowley's deck, what would I say?
No, it's very, very magical. It is depending again about the reader.
It depends who does it.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know he was also a soul and he had deep insights.
Yeah. They did.
But then the side was he had not been released, redeemed in him?
Kind of been redeemed.
Yeah, Freda Harris, the artist, is the one who made those.
Under his direction.
But she had her own self-inspiration. I mean, there's some very.
I've used it too, you know what I mean? I've used it too. You know, it's all just personal. It's personal taste. So I always felt a little tainted when I used it, you know, just a wee bit. I like some of the other decks that somehow shine with a clearer light, but it is a very interesting deck.
And if the reader who's offering this has no ratio whatsoever, 1 in 3.
So they just want to manipulate you and get you in their power. I'd go for the reading.
But you have to know yourself. Let us take the symbolism. Swastika.
Mm-hmm, right.
Hitler's group was using swastika, and yet it is the most deepest, one of the oldest symbols on earth.
Yeah.
Which is telling about how the divine is working in matter.
Right.
So and many other symbols. So it is always up to everyone.
I've already declined.
Yeah. I think so. The good old stodgy weight deck, maybe a little less. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. So we're dealing with two matters now. The condition of the waters, so you adjust your desires and you purify them, and you guard your identity against the intrusion of disintegrating entities who enter because of their very nature, not through any malevolence, but simply because of what they are. Okay, so having done that, both the solar angel and the worker in magic maintain an attitude of contemplation. Now comes the eye, or that profound condition which succeeds what is called meditation. So, concentration is Leo, meditation is Virgo, contemplation is Libra. This is the higher interlude. Libra rules all interludes, contemplation is the higher interlude. And now we're going to see what is the value of this contemplation. It's rather interesting. In contemplation, the inner eye, whichever inner eye you've got working for you, it can be the eye of your imagination at first, or maybe eventually the third eye, is fixed upon the object of contemplation. And this produces unconsciously, in most cases, a steady stream of energy which is focused upon the objective, producing vitalization and activity. So, you know, when you keep your eye on it, you vitalize it. And that we can do with any enterprise or business or group or whatever. Keep your eye on it, vitalize it. It is the basis of the work of transmutation. And this is a really interesting occult idea. For instance, when the human substance is transmuted into solar substance, the ego contemplates his lunar bodies, and gradually the work is accomplished. He does it all with eye and consciousness. The ego on the higher mental plane is focused on the lunar bodies, and that's how he goes about transmuting those lunar bodies. So you know the old saying, according to how you look at someone, you may either retard them or elevate them. It's the old Don Quixote thing, isn't it? Man of La Mancha idea, you know. He held Aldonza until she became Dulcinea.
One question.
Yeah. Yes.
What I have debated for several years.
It's called a counterweight.
Several years. Mm-hmm. Many times I have heard that it is said that it takes solar angel or ego is looking the personality every now and then in 300 years or so. I think you have
check in on humanity every 300 years. Yeah.
So.
This, but now you're a disciple, and right. Now you're a magician, and now you've taken a couple of initiations, and now the solar angel has to gear up for intensive work with you.
Because I remember how we were talking
in
Denmark, and then it was...
You remember too much.
Oh, okay. Because it irritated me so much, and I was battling in my mind that I cannot understand, because then we were talking about near that the aspirants... also are in that category, and I thought it has to be a primitive person who is looked after in so huge span of time. And now you are, what opinion?
The cycles of interest are those periods in which the masters pay close attention to the quality aspect of mankind are also being speeded up. The gauging process will take place now every 300 years instead of every 1,000 years. As has been the case, but this is all of humanity, until 1575 AD. Does 1575 look like an interesting date to you?
Yeah.
What is it?
Part of the 100-year cycle.
Well, it is. But it's more. Okay, it is all that too, but remember, when did the second ray come into incarnation? 1575. This change can be attributed to the greater sensitivity of man's response to spiritual stimulation and to the rapidity with which he deals with his personality. This is, of course, not apparent to you on account of your day-by-day consideration of each other. It is, however, apparent to those who view humanity with greater disinterestedness, deeper understanding, and over much more extended cycles of time. 300 years, you know. But the thing, you know, if you're a channel in the light, who's looking in on you and giving a report every year or whatever? You've got an interior disciple reporting to your master how you're doing.
You know, if that would be true, think about this evolution at the moment on planet. In 1 year and 5 years, we have been leaping like earlier several hundred years.
That's right.
So that's why I don't believe in this.
There are many people who have an interview with DK coming. I have made mental note of all the disagreements that people have, and I think, you know, they're going to be taken to the woodshed. It's okay.
I get the feeling all the masters have been called in to watch all this go down, and they're all sitting there watching this very closely.
Yeah, and because it is also the time of the forerunners.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that they have been just left there then. And then after 300 years, they will look, oh my goodness.
I think it is speeding up, you know what I mean? Okay, just a little more, please. So the ego contemplates, in other words, if you want to vitalize, then contemplate. Vitalize the object of contemplation through contemplation. So, you know, ego does this with the personality, and you might do this with your thought form, right? When his reflection man has reached a point in evolution where he can meditate and contemplate, the work is more rapidly accelerated. In other words, it's not only the ego contemplating you, you can help too. And transmutation proceeds with rapidity, particularly on the physical plane, maybe more so than on the astral or mental. In the work of thought form building, the man in contemplation pursues the work of energizing and vitalizing, strengthening the... Remember all these words about, and now the form is strong enough to ensure that the work can go forward on the mental plane or on the astral plane. It has to be of a certain vital condition before the process can be guaranteed to succeed. And so, a contemplation has to be sufficient. And so, can you be a white magician if you can't contemplate?
No.
Well, think about it. If you're just learning to meditate, you're not a white magician, are you? And learning to contemplate is not easy. I mean, how many have read From Intellect to Intuition? Okay? So it's really, really good. And right there in that one chapter, Alice Bailey gives more on contemplation than I've ever seen anywhere. It's brilliant. You know, it's brilliant. The chapter on meditation and contemplation. And as you read what contemplation really is, you begin to see, hey, this is not an everyday thing. This is not just what I do when I sit down to meditate. This is more. Remember, slipping out of our own meditation into the meditation of the soul. That's what contemplation is. Yes, well, you know, I would say that a high form of contemplation is samadhi. I would say the kind of contemplation she's trying to have people do is not quite the full range of it.
Right.
But it, of course, you know, as I said...
It's moving beyond the yana.
Yes, it is. Exactly. And the Yoga Sutra is called contemplation and samadhi equivalently. Okay. But we also know that the full samadhi is the fifth degree, or maybe fourth degree. So the kind of contemplation that is common to the third degree is not the total samadhi.
Yeah.
But when you are able to contemplate, you really contemplate, you are approaching the third degree. So we cannot minimize it. This is all to say that the white magician is active as a real white magician when the third degree is taking place, and if we're not there, we're practicing, we're learning how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an example? I mean, I would like to put this into some kind of a practical context.
Well, we're making thought forms, you know, and we don't know yet. First of all, can we receive from the ego the pure egoic intent? Okay, that depends on the quality of your meditation. So first of all, you have to be impressible. And then, you have to grow your thought form.
So, let's take an example.
Suppose you want to start a business. Suppose you want to start some form of service that has to do with what you're going to do in the world. You're going to undertake a piece of the plan. Maybe that's what you were going to speak of.
What about the history of the United Nations? That's a fascinating one.
Yeah, that's right.
High level, working through a couple.
League of Nations was one. League of Nations. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Serapis Bay. You know,
Serapis Bay starts it.
Yeah.
Colonel House
picks it up.
He is a disciple related to him.
Yeah.
Apparently a six-way disciple. Picks it up. Then Woodrow Wilson, the aspirant, gets it, brings it out to humanity. It is formed accordingly. But that is more a chain of command, you know. We're talking about the magician. Well, maybe Serapis Bay sent it forth that way.
Well, I'm wondering exactly how we got this thing going.
Exactly. Maybe he didn't talk to Colonel House about it, right?
But she wanted to know on the individual
thing. Yeah, more like how this one.
Well, what does the group say?
But you said, suppose you want to start a business or you want to undertake a piece of the plan.
Yeah, a real piece of the plan.
A real piece of the plan.
Yeah, let's just create a scenario and let's take one thought form and let's lead it through the whole process.
University when the three of you went into meditation.
I have a feeling we acted too quickly. But we certainly were, you know, there was something, it was the harmonic convergence, there certainly was something in the air. We all got together in meditation around, around 4:20. By 4:22, the idea had come through, in fullness. By 4:25, we were at the computer, establishing the fact that it existed. It was the Aries approach, of course. But there was a very, very strong impression about starting a spiritual university. And we didn't really, you know, brood upon the whole structure of it. We wanted to anchor the idea at the moment that it really hit. And then later we returned to it, fleshing it out, you know, coming back to the idea. I don't know if we strengthened it with the Om the way we should have, but we certainly revisited the idea constantly. And it began to grow in the mind. Then we began to say, well, this is a great idea. We want to do something about it. So in our own way, it descended onto the astral plane and we became terribly motivated about doing this. And then we began to carry it out to other people and put it into action by calling people together, animating them, motivating them. We were still working on the astral plane. And then we took the steps to actually, you know, invite the people there in physical presence to make the thing a reality. Now, of course, we made many mistakes along the way, and I probably was the chief mistake maker, but the idea was so strong that it has persisted. And there has been a lot of vitalizing power that has come through other people who have been inspired by the idea, and they have provided their substance to keep it going, namely time, money, effort, and all the rest of it. So, you know, and the loop still continues. We still, you know, what was this meant to be? What is this meant to be? How can this be still purer in form? We keep on revisiting the initial impulse, which turns out to be nothing but DK's impulse in Letters on Occult Meditation. But how can we adapt it? So we keep on revisiting the purity of the form, the quality of our aspiration and motivation, and the resources available to it. At no time, I think, did we ever, you know, send this forth with magical words per se. It's sent forth over the telephone and over the computer, and again, it's out there. And we could say that in a way it is operating by itself at this point. It certainly hasn't stayed in our aura, if you know what I mean. It's not sitting there vampirizing the senders because we got it out there so fast, you know. And it was fairly selfless. There was nothing in there about, you know, making us anything. It was just carrying out DK's wish. So it never came back to us as a vampirizing form. And, you know, there are people here that are on the board of the USR, and they're participating in it right now, sustaining it and developing it over the years. We
and
have not
people here that were on the original board.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yes, yes.
Neighborhood walks.
That's right. See, some of you all came back despite my behavior. All right. But okay, true. It's not the exact model. But then again, we can't give the exact model because we don't know the releasing words. We only know that we might brood longer on it. We might make it much clearer than it was when it went forth. Maybe it went forth prematurely. There were 8 fire signs in the sky at the time this made its impression.
Wow.
Know what I mean? So it really went out there quickly.
But you're an Aries.
Yeah, you know how it goes. And Dorothy, she's very quick, and Marianne will support that kind of thing. So she has a lot of Aries in her chart. So we thought it was just a great idea, we went with it. But maybe if we had really followed the magical process, we would have fleshed it out internally further, fully, you know. And then maybe we would have followed certain occult methods. But I think when it came to the astral plane, I think we did the right thing. Our motives were pure, I think. And even though our technique was not necessarily wise at all times, our motives were pure. And then we, maybe we would have, well, we have to follow the next rules as to how we would deal with the astral plane. Because we're not there yet, we're still on the mental plane. But we could have fleshed it out more. Instead, we kind of learned as we went, which is a much more human way of doing it. It's not really what white magic is telling us.
It reinforces the idea that thought form, even though it wasn't purposely created,
it was used. It was used. That thought form was used by those who would like to see it happen. And even crashing against the rocks repeatedly, it didn't die. You know, there's so many.
That's a more recent example than that. You have the more occult.
Yes. Now, how was that done? I'm afraid that, no, there we brooded much longer. There, sadder and wiser.
Yes, and you restrained yourself because you were actually ready to once a year.
A year ahead. Yes, I restrained my errors. Yes, I did. I had a little help from people suggesting that I should. And I was working with a man who was even more eager than I was, and he was very upset when we didn't just plunge into activity. But I saw that many forces had to be gathered first before this was done. And so, yes, that was an example of having learned over a period of time.
Yes, you saw it.
I believe there's an implication there.
Take it off, Paul.
That my eyes perhaps were... There was help from my friends, but I want to tell you that Victoria and I had a lot of conversations where we were just saying, we can't do this.
Right.
See? And then, one night, or one day, or something, it came down, and a change occurred, and then the statement was, you know, we're going to do this. Because, you know, something impressed itself, you know what I mean? And so from then on, it was just a meticulous gathering of forces and trying to clarify the idea. The desire was there, interest other people, and so forth. Precipitation occurred rather rapidly, but with the internet, that's not so hard. But yet it was complex. And the whole thing is still a loop in which we are refining and refining what can be done with Master DK's intentions and how we can motivate other people who don't want to work, essentially. I mean, you know what I mean? In other words, Master DK calls for all this work. You know how work is. And so we want to give the incentive to people. So it has to do with skillful presentation, so we're still refining our techniques. Did we send forth magical words and do all of this? I don't think so.
You wrote a series of invitations, I think.
I did, and maybe they carry it somewhere.
You were building the thought forms, and you were informing it through the thought forms, and making emails, and inspiring emails, and supplicating emails.
Supplicating, please, please join. Yes, so there's a certain amount of begging went on, I agree. Okay. But
also, wasn't it a step from having, in the building of this thought form, from having it in physical form to the moment where you see that it wasn't going to be in physical form, but the internet.
Well, we never thought about making it in physical form this time. It was always going to be an internet idea, but we did definitely hesitate to actually go with it because of so many... Well, because of just a lot of negativity from many people. You can't do this. Repeatedly said, you can't do this, you know. And even at the last USR conference, I got hit by about 10 powerful people telling me that you can't do this. Of course, that always inspires me.
What reason would they say these are, people
won't be interested, we've done this before, they won't want to work, whatever, they were right, okay. But
they want to work face to face.
Yeah, exactly. You can't sustain this, you know. But basically, we've done this. Well, they haven't done 3% of this, you know.
And it is the new things, new wings. This is old.
Old DK, old Master DK, you know.
An old way.
Old way. Doing as he asked us to do. And there are many more better ways. What are they? Well, but okay. Mm-hmm. Don't do the old way. So anyway, And no one will want to participate, and right away we found out that a lot of people wanted to participate. They really wanted to participate. Our faculty is almost bigger than our student body. Of course, we've managed there by making the faculty a student body. You know, because really, if you're not a student, you can't be a teacher. So, yeah.
Just to get back to Stefan's question, because I think it's a trigger question, I think one way to simply look at the process is that the divine plan is manifesting itself, and it does that through the soul, and that all of us are, to one degree or another, in touch with our soul, and it's the soul itself that initiates this process. And when we become aware that our soul has some intention that it is trying to impress on us, and this can take a long time. You know, we may take a long time to realize, okay, there's something there that doesn't want to go away, we can align ourselves with that soul and we can enter into the magical process of giving birth to that thought form on the mental plane and feeding it and nurturing it and begin to slowly follow the steps. But we are all part of the divine plan. Our very instruments are part of the divine plan. And often, is exactly what I think we're talking about here, it's rebuilding our instruments that is the first magical undertaking.
Mm.
And we can use this process to rebuild our mental body and our emotional body and our activities and our environment. So it's, I think it can be applied in a very wide sense.
Absolutely.
Not in its perfection, of course, but we have the general steps.
No. The schools can't be done in perfection. And the magical process cannot be done in perfection. Certain things are missing. Certain capabilities, certain of the more occult capabilities are missing that would give exactitude to the process and would make it infallible.
Could you find this quotation by Dike where he talks about this 14 years? How from the mental plane, the thought is precipitating itself 14 years. And that is how we work with the forehead. I think it is wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know if I can find it immediately.
So
14
years. And that is something like how disciple has to learn to work with the forehead, or that is how we work with the forehead.
It takes 14 years for discussion.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because that is the magical process. Then it is really anchored here on the physical plane. And that's why if you think about these impulses and inspirations, and in how many groups after 3 years, group is gone. Because they cannot, what Lynn was saying earlier, it is this thing that in substance itself is the counterforce. Mm-hmm. And we have to just stay and stay there that this soul can work through all of these sublanes. And think about now, it is 2000 was Shambhala impact.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are in totally different thing on this planet. It's at the time of the forerunners and the Shambhala impact. So things are only now coming into something in several years. Maybe from 2000 to 2014 is some very concrete things what we are going to see, what okay. disciples should or would have been making.
This thing about the 14 years I have in front of you before, so are you saying in all the creative process that's a long period of time.
From mental plane.
This is what he says is the one I can find. When a man starts out to follow the path of occult meditation, it takes well nigh 14 years to rebuild the subtle bodies and incidentally the physical. All through that period it is not safe to tamper with the unknown. For only the very strong, refined physical body, the controlled, stable, and equilibrized emotional body, equalized, and the properly striated mentally body can enter into the subtler planes and literally work with Fohat, for that is what the occult does. Okay.
Yeah, but that's not exactly for the magical, for the creative process.
Well, it's recreating yourself. Recreating yourself.
But so in the same way, because the one who really brings forth something is rebuilding oneself, and that is how also it. We see already on physical plane something, but before it is really built there, it is 14 years. And it is related, of course, Saturn, this whole process.
Well, I think what I'm understanding here is that it does take 14 years to reveal our instrument so that it can become a good instrument to perform the magical
thing.
So the impulse descends all the way through.
Once we start performing, or whoever is ready to start performing the magical process, it takes 14 years every time you're kind of in the process of...
Well, probably not.
Right.
But for an idea really to descend all the way through your vehicles and not have resistance, something impulsed by the soul, it sounds to me like it takes 14 years.
Well, Mohammed Yunus...
It's half a cycle.
When Mohammed Yunus got the Peace Prize, or the Price for Economics recently, he talked about the journey he had to graduate students around Bangladesh, seeing the poverty there, wondering for a number of years, it wasn't quite 14, it was a number of years to figure out how can I help the situation. The whole notion of micro-lending began to gather strength in him. Mm-hmm. He starts on a small experiment, and that thing has exploded in the last 15 or 20 years. So,
let me ask you then, Sarah, then, how long did it take your thought form to manifest? I mean,
You're right. Exactly.
Well, it's still manifesting now. It's unfolding, but... within a year, we were actually involved in activity. Actually, had some outer appearance of that initial impulse.
Did you follow this procedure?
I think there's many steps that we don't have all the keys for. But yeah, in general, I tried to use that general paradigm.
Mm-hmm. I joined Lakers or something.
It's something that can be used over and over again in a larger process. Every time I have to communicate with donors, for instance, I align and I go through this creative process and something comes out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I'm learning to use the creative process in the training with the museum material is more like, you know, really, you can use it all the time, and we're supposed to use it all the time in everything you're doing, so you don't need 14 years to kind of... I mean, I understand that, you know, with a big purpose in your life, or to reveal the instrument, that's another thing, but for things like, okay, I'm involved in a new project, I'm going to start a new project that is coming into my mind, and that's the next step, let's say start teaching a class. You know, you can work for a week, for a month, whatever, and then, you know, through all these steps until something, you know, you will probably manifest. But I don't think it's a process that takes that long. Maybe for our small building, you know.
It's an archetypal duration of the cycle of the moon at 27 years, 27 plus years. In other words, it's the, or even 29 something, it's the moment of the half lunation.
Yeah.
That's your 14 years. It's the time after you've planted the seed till the a moment of objectivity is achieved, and you understand how far you've gone, and then comes the reassessment and the generalizing of the process to fulfill it until the next lunation.
There's a 14-day cycle, also the lunar cycle.
Yes, yes.
And what we are not seeing now, we are only concentrated one life. Because we have to look that we are talking about occult changes, meaning that impact in the society or in the planes is such that there has come and grown something new. And that's why the magician has to hold, being able to be that kind of strong tool, to hold it, so that these daily forces are changed. So we may have had a start, let's say, three lives ago, then we didn't do anything next life, the third life we did something, and now we accomplished that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something very powerful when we think about the... think about how the human being is born. A 14 years child is just starting now to find himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the tool also, whatever organization we create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can create all kinds of organizations, but this can, what hierarchy can really use, has to have substance in it. And if it is done according to the law, this kind of tools are so powerful that they will last then however long.
I know that there's a hidden planet that many hypothesize called Sigma, and it's got about a 13 and a half year cycle. And it's extremely karmic. And some of the astrologers in our group think of it as the esoteric Saturn. Whether or not that's true, it certainly is the calculus signum, which means summation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that when we had the sigma moment, or 13 and a half, 14 years for the University of the Seven Rays, we had the complete gathering of all the PhD classes in the year 2000. It just so happened that 2000 was that year. And people who had been in many different classes, including all the PhD classes extant at that time, all gathered in California for a very synthetic realization concerning where we had been and where we might be going. So in that case, the 13 or 14 year cycle really worked out very clearly. We really examined the whole process and how much it had manifested up to that time, and then we were in a position to enlarge upon it and improve upon it. So those moments of full moon realization, that's what the 14 years is all about to me. Because when you're in that point of objectivity, when you're standing in Aries and you have over here Libra, a full moon, you have the fullest opportunity to see what has become of the seed you planted at the new moon. So there's a moment of realization about exactly what have you made and how far has it manifested.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you what, we are at the point, we cannot, we're very close to the end of this section, but I'm not going to, well, we're very close.
Let's do it.
We're just very close.
Let's do it. Overtime.
Okay, well, maybe we're not that close. okay, anyway, I said no musician, musician ever wants to lose control. Okay, producing vitalization. Okay, the ego, yeah, we did that. The ego contemplates the lunar bodies.
Mm-hmm.
When his reflection man has reached a point of evolution where he can meditate and cooperation comes, and the work of thought form building, the man in contemplation energizes and vitalizes. It might be said here that the eye is the great directing agency, and we have done our bit on the eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the third eye is used, which is the case in contemplation, you know, sometimes the sign Libra almost looks like that eye in the middle of the head looking out. It is the sun. It is the synthesizer and director of triple energy, the three energies that are going around it. Hence the powerful work performed by those in whom it is functioning. The third eye only begins to function when the third circle of egoic petals is beginning slowly to unfold, and that is the first initiation period. Okay. The students will study the effect of the human eye on the physical plane and then extend the concept to the work of the interior thinker. As he utilizes the third eye, they will get an interesting light upon the subject of thought control. And then the old commentary says, and this is it, when the eye is blind, the forms created revolve in circles and fulfill not the law. When the eye is open, force streams forth, direction is assured, fulfillment is certain, and the plans proceed under the law. The eye which is blue in color, the eye which sees not red, when open, produce that which is intended with great facility. And here we have the old Vulcan Mars thing. If you don't see red, then desire is no longer influencing how you see and how you direct. You are unbiased and you're using the will instead of desire. So it's a lower red we're talking about here. The eye of Shiva is blue and it's in line with the purposes of this solar system. Because we're told that our solar logos is blue and his children are of his nature. We just read that. And that was the explanation of the blue eye. Okay. Okay, well, when we start tomorrow, we will continue this Rule 5. Maybe we will only get through the rules of the mental plane, but even that would be something. I don't really suppose we have time to say what we all gathered today, but
we have gathered a lot.
Can I just share one passage? I finally tracked down the wheel pedals, I think.
Okay.
This is the second sentence of Rule 4 on 1002. The force used by the ego in the work of forcing a man to carry out his purpose has been dynamic will, and the pedal or energy center employed has been one of the will pedals. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that was it. Forcing the man to create?
Carry out his purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So the protective pedal.
1,002.
So when the, you know, we said that the ego forces and drives and urges the man forward and is using a will pedal to do so. But when we're talking about protection, it's one of the heart pedals, and or maybe the whole tier, I'm not sure, I can't remember, and the throat center. And then the stream, the protective stream. Well, this is, if I can just say, we're told by Master M that the best way to ward off obsession is through the opening of the heart center. So obviously, if these various devas are going to take you over because you're unprotected, the heart center is one of the great protective mechanisms for that. So maybe one day in another 100 years or so, or 200 years, we will know from the soul, we will recall from Atlantis, not preferred way, or we will be told directly by the hierarchy what words to use in releasing the thought form so it can work magically on its own and we can be protective as we continue the process of manifestation. All of that lies in the future. Let's just have the mantra of the new group of world servers. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.